This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, February 24th, 2020. I'm Buster Olney, producing back in Bristol, Taylor Schwenk. Taylor, how was your weekend?
Weekend was great. A lot of chilling on the couch. Made some fried chicken sandwiches for dinner last night. A couple fried Oreos as well. And we got some interesting news around the diamond with this whole Madison Bumgarner thing.
Yeah, I think because of recent events, we should drop the usual opening and go with this.
The Lone Ranger.
Oh, you're not going to believe what Madison Bumgarner has been doing. Before we get to all that and what we heard from Yoenis Cespedes over the weekend and about the death threats aimed at the Astros, be sure to check out another fine offering from ESPN Podcast, The Low Post. With the NBA coming down the home stretch, Zach Lowe and 538's Chris Herring pick their five most interesting players for the rest of the season. Find it wherever you get your podcast. Scott Miller is the national Major League Baseball columnist for Bleacher Report and for Turner Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Scott Miller, BBL. Scott, how you doing this morning?
Real good, Buster. Greetings from Florida, and happy spring training's underway, and we'll see. It's been interesting so far, no doubt about that.
Yeah, you've been bouncing all around Florida. You've seen a lot of camps, talked to a lot of people. But we're going to start by talking about a player who's currently out in Arizona. That would be Madison Bumgarner. This story came out on Sunday from The Athletic. And according to that website, Bumgarner has been doing rodeo events under an assumed name in steer roping competitions. He's been registered as Mason Saunders. Saunders is his wife's maiden name. And Mason is something that his wife calls him when they're out in public, and just something different. And I got some thoughts on this story, Scott. He's someone who's been roping steers since he was about 15 or 16. We saw him in the giant celebration a few years ago ride in on a horse. One, it's stunning, but it's not really stunning. Would you agree with me in that regard?
I absolutely would. And Madison Bumgarner is a different cat. I mean, you know, from the backwoods of North Carolina. And, it's like you can take the country out of the boy, but you can't take the boy out of the country, right? It's phenomenal that it's been going on this long and nobody knew about it. And the calf roping or steer roping, I mean, and it's just, you know, guys aren't allowed to ski in the off season or play basketball for their contracts because of, you know, clubs are worried about their health. I mean, I don't know where this ranks on the danger list, but, you know, I mean, granted, he was a free agent, so he was gambling with his own future, but oh my goodness.
Yeah, the closest thing that I ever heard to something like this was when I was covering the Mets back in 1997, Jason Isringhausen, who you got to know, longtime reliever in the big leagues, but at that time he was a young player with the Mets. And one spring he was rehabilitating from some sort of an arm injury, and Bobby Valentine, who was the manager of the team at that time, got word that one of his players may have been participating in a local softball league under an assumed name for a team that represented a gentleman's club. And so Bobby made his way out to the softball field, and sure enough, there was his young star pitcher who was playing softball. That's the closest thing that I've heard to this. But again, it's not a surprise when it comes to Madison. You know, I've got 1,000 Madison Bumgarner stories. So do you. One of my favorite ones was asking one time, I walked up to him. I said, "Hey, I got to do a report on you later tonight. Is it true that when you got married to your wife, that you gave her a cow as a wedding present?" And he thought about it for a second, and he goes, "No, that's not true. When I gave it to her, it was a bull." And then he paused and he goes, "And now it's a steer." like that's Madison Bumgarner. My second thought on this is that it's not surprising that he was really good at this. According to The Athletic, he won $26,560 in a competition in December, Scott.
Well, and that's how he got outed, right? Because he was really good. Because I think the way they found the story, somebody saw, you know, his picture, he and his partner that won the $26,000, there was a picture on, you know, some rodeo website. And apparently most of the time he didn't get his pictures taken. But in this, it was such a big prize that they won that they got their picture snapped. And then, you know, I don't know how in today's day and age he would think that if somebody takes my picture at the rodeo, like, I'm not going to get found out. But it's just such a wacky story. I guess Buster, you know, I mean, I have to say, I've never been to a rodeo, and I don't quite understand all of it. But it seems like maybe it would be less dangerous than dirt biking, which is what wrecked one of his seasons a couple years ago.
I have been to a rodeo, and yes, Madison Bumgarner is a lot bigger than those steers that he's roping. But there is a level of danger, which gets me to my third point. I don't think the Diamondbacks are going to necessarily laugh this off in the same way that Bruce Bochy and the Giants might have. You know, when Madison got hurt on the dirt bike, you know, they were unhappy about it, but no one really held it against him because he was, you know, he was mad bum. He was the guy who helped them win three World Series. He had a lot of credibility built up. And here's the other part of this, and I don't know if any of them would say this out loud with the Giants. I think part of the reason why they they didn't react so strongly was he had such an incredible team-friendly contract. Like, he was so much undervalued with the money that he was making from the Giants that I really believe the Giants probably were like, yeah, we could hold his feet to the fire, but you know what? We've been making money hand over fist off this guy's back. The Diamondbacks aren't going to feel that way.
No,
they just gave him $85 million. And for this story, Mike Hazen, who heads up baseball operations for the Diamondbacks, basically wouldn't comment on contract language. I would be shocked if Mike Hazen doesn't basically call him into his office and say, okay, you can either be a pitcher or you can play in the rodeo. What do you want to do, Madison?
Yeah.
What do you think, Scott?
No question. Because to your point, Buster, I mean, those three World Series rings that Bumgarner helped the Giants win, I mean, he had kind of collateral in the bank with that organization, by not helping them win one or two, but three. And not only that, but, you know, that 2014 World Series where the legendary performance out of the bullpen in game seven. I mean, he picked those guys up on his back and led them to the promised land. And between that and, as you say, he also had signed that club friendly contract. I mean, he was one of the most arguably one of the most underpaid men in the game of baseball, not only in recent years, but, you know, maybe ever, based on what he did for that franchise and where his contract was at. So I think you're right. I think they gave him a ton of leeway. Now, with the Diamondbacks, I mean, you might have heard the Dodgers have won, what, 7 NL West titles in a row, and they're going for another one. And it looks like, I think the Dodgers, with the acquisitions of Betts and Price, they can probably spot the other four teams in the National League a 10-game lead each. And they're still going to win the division going away. The Diamondbacks have to have everything go perfectly for them. And part of going everything perfectly, because they're undermanned simply because of the Dodgers in the division, part of everything going perfectly is having Mad Bum healthy and very productive. And, you know, the Diamondbacks, one or two injuries could just wreck their season based on, you know, they've got a talented team and they can have a good year, but based on what's in that division over there in Los Angeles.
Yeah, knowing Mike Hazen, I mean, he is as blunt as a sledgehammer. And I suspect that, you know, he's going to call him into his office. If he hasn't already gone out and saw, if he didn't already go out last night to see him,
yeah,
then basically say this.
Yes.
Yeah, and he may just simply tell him, look, this stops right now. Because not only, I remember talking with Diamondbacks people at the time they signed Bumgarner, it wasn't only the excitement level about what they felt like that Bumgarner had in the tank and things that they could show him through the use of analytics, but also they felt like this is a guy who could be a leader. So now you have the leader of your staff, one of the leaders on your team, the most decorated member of your entire organization, basically playing on the side and putting his career in the season of the Diamondbacks at risk for the reasons that you just described. I don't think Hazen is going to laugh that off.
No, not at all. I mean, it's there's only more and more pressure in this game as well. I mean, there's obviously always been pressure, but, you know, there's just pressure on the players. There's pressure on the executives. And as you know, we talk about the front offices over the past decade or more getting smarter and smarter based on analytics and everything else they bring into the, you know, they use. I mean, there's a ton of pressure. I mean, you know, every contract given out, not just financial, but to win and to keep jobs. And I think this is, Buster, one of those stories for us on the outside. It's highly amusing for those inside the Diamondbacks offices. There had to be some language used that most people don't use, and some thermometers when taking the temperature inside those offices.
No doubt about it, which is probably similar to the way that the Mets front office reacted when they got word last summer that Yoenis Cespedes got injured. You know, it was involved a wild boar. That's his story. He's sticking to it. He's been working his way back since then. He met with reporters on Sunday, and speaking through an interpreter, he said, if I continue progressing the way that I am, yes, I'll be ready for the start of the season. I've had a number of people say this to me this winter, Scott. Don't bet against Yoenis Cespedes in a contract year, which it is for him this season, especially after he lost a lot of his guaranteed salary because of how he got injured.
Yeah, right. And Cespedes, we know what he's done. He's almost become a forgotten guy, right? I mean, there was a time not that long ago where he was one of the most feared hitters in the game. But, you know, between the trades and certainly the injuries and then he was rehabbing last year. And I mean, aside from the fact that I don't know of any other player that's ever been injured by a wild boar, as the story goes, I don't know of any player that was injured as badly as him while on a rehab assignment. I mean, this story is all kinds of strange from 10 different angles. But I like that, as you said, he uses a translator. But I liked it yesterday when asked about his motivation on a scale from 1 to 10 to come back. He didn't need the translator for that. He answered in English, a 12 is his motivation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He's got a lot riding on this year. You recently did a story for Bleacher Report about the baseball factory that is Vanderbilt University, a story near and dear to my heart. I was there a couple weeks ago working on something. You went there in December. What did you learn when you went there? Because it is an unusual place in the off season.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a mecca for not just Vandy alums, but that are playing professional ball, but that a lot of them bring friends back because they kind of spread the gospel of Vanderbilt during the season. Like, oh, you should come work out at Vandy. You know, there's so much good going on. You know, Coach Tim Corbin's a legend. Not that he works with them, but it all, you know, everything flows through him. And it was his idea to have an alumni locker room. I thought that was really impressive. I mean, Vandy has, it's a beautiful facility anyway, as I know you know, Buster, but the locker room, 20 locker pro locker room. So when guys like, you know, whoever it is, David Price, Kurt Casale, Kyle Wright, Mike Yastrzemski go back in the winter to work out, they have their own locker, their own facilities. It's separate from everything else. And, you know, I love that, you know, when they were building the facility, you know, Corbin talked to the chancellor at the time, and the chancellor said, well, I understand, you know, why in building a new facility, I understand why, you know, the locker room facilities have to go be good. I understand why the classroom you want has to be there. But this third thing, this pro locker room, why do you want that? And I thought it was a beautiful answer. You know, Corbin told the chancellor, well, you've got an older daughter, right? Yes. She's gone away from home. She's graduated. Yes. Well, you keep her bedroom open, right? Well, yeah. Ah, that's why you went. Corbin said, you know, to bring the alumni back, I'd like to leave the light on for them, so to speak. And he thinks it helps his current team, because how good are those resources when the varsity team is working out over the winter? And then here comes a Jack Flaherty, who was there when I was there in December, by the way, and he's not even a Vandy guy, but he thinks so much of Coach Corbin, he tries to come back once a year. you know, the varsity players that can pick his brain, or pick who, you know, the catchers that can talk to Kurt Casale about whatever it is, pitch framing, how do you do it in Cincinnati? I mean, so many good resources for the current players. And also, as you know, Corb said, guys that leave school, when we have a pro locker room for them, I think it encourages them maybe to come spend time here and get their degrees when they're, you know, when they're through our, you know, work on classes in the winter. Just so much good. I mean, I love that he doesn't, there's no sense of entitlement, that every year the players in the fall start working out in just black and white t-shirts. He doesn't even issue Vanderbilt logos to them until he sees them coming together as a team, even this year coming off the national title. So very, very impressive culture, and very cool that dozens and dozens of pro players, Vanderbilt and non-Bandy alums, go back to work there during the winter.
And I agree with you. I think it's such a plus for the current players to have access to those guys, to be able to pick their brain. You see Al Leiter's son last week made his debut.
Yes.
A freshman there. And, you know, during the wintertime, when a David Price comes back, when a Mookie Betts comes back, I was there at a time when all the Red Sox Dodger trade stuff was going on, and Mookie and David were working out there, probably waiting word on whether or not that trade went through. Yeah. So it really is an amazing facility. And by the way, built with David Price's donation. Good on him for doing that.
That was another thing that I was impressed by. I mean, you know, I knew that David had kicked in a lot of money. I think the new baseball facility that opened a couple years ago, you know, and obviously after 3 or 4 years of construction, I think it's a $13 million facility. And David Price was, as they call it, the capstone gift, $2.5 million he gave. And I talked to David Price for the story. He's like, Coach Corbin, all he's done for me, I could never repay that school for what it's meant to me. That's why he gave the gift. But the other thing, Buster, that I was really impressed with is that $13 million facility, $2.5 million from David Price. But the Vanderbilt people told me they estimate about 60% of players who have played for Coach Corbin kicked in and donated money for that facility. 60%. I mean, I love coaches can touch a lot of lives. And to me, that shows how many lives Coach Corbin not only has touched, but how much impact he's had on those lives.
I mentioned that trade, Dodgers and the Red Sox, Mookie Betts being dealt. We got this Bleacher Tweet question from Corey Rukert. Corey, I hope I pronounced it right, at CoreyR_12. He asked, with Boston trading Betts, is there any chance Xander Bogaerts gets dealt in the supposed Sox, Padres, Reds conversation they had around Will Myers? Scott, I think there's no chance. I mean, when I was in the Red Sox camp last week, I sensed that the ownership there feels a lot of pressure externally from their fans, a lot of anger over the Betts trade. And what they're going to do moving forward is adding players after the 2020 season. There's no chance Bogaerts gets traded. What do you think?
I totally agree with you, Buster. And Corey, I think you can rest easy with Xander Bogaerts because, as Buster just said, I think I was through the Red Sox camp a week or 10 days ago. And yes, I think the blowback that this ownership group got from the Betts Price deal really caught them off guard. And I think they scrambled to try to explain things belatedly to fans. And look, I think from what I understand, I think season ticket sales are down about 15%. That there's genuine outrage in the Boston market and I think they're going to add, not subtract. I know in the deal you mentioned, Corey, or the rumored deal, the Padres owe Will Myers $61 million. First off, if you plug Will Myers into that outfield, he's not even close to Mookie Betts. Not that anybody is, but I mean, I don't see them adding him. But also, the Padres want $61 million left on Will. They want the Red Sox to eat about two-thirds of it, and I just don't think that's how the Red Sox are going to spend their money. I think they're going to add, but they're not going to add some expensive underachiever like Will Myers. I think you can definitely rest easy on that one, Corey.
Yeah, the one way I think that deal potentially gets done would be if the Red Sox essentially bought prospects from the Padres. Okay, we'll take on that Will Myers contract. We'll take that extra outfielder off your hands. But you're going to give us a couple of prime prospects. And then after they acquire Myers, wouldn't shock me if they just released him or just moved on or waived him or did something like that. Essentially use that opportunity to buy prospects. But they would not be acquiring Will Myers to plug him into their outfield.
No, no, you're right. Will Myers, I would not see playing with the Red Sox at all. The way you just laid it out, Buster, clearly everybody knows the Padres have prospects. That's why they're popular in trade talks these days. And they also have an issue on their 40-man roster where they have so many prospects. You know, this year they had to add some of them to the 40-man. Next year they're going to add a couple more. And eventually they're going to have more prospects than they can fit on the 40-man in the way it looks. And that would be the case, to, as you just laid out, if the team buys prospects and the Padres are like, well, we're not going to give you our top two prospects, but we've got excess that we aren't going to be able to fit on the 40-man roster. But, you know, Boston's looking to get younger, looking for prospects. But Xander Bogaerts, I think, is going to be a centerpiece there for a long time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, I got one more thing for you. Over the weekend, the Astros hit the field for the first time since the sign-stealing scandal. None of the regulars were in the lineup. On Saturday, Dusty Baker kept the regulars out of it, and they were booed. Probably a precursor for what's going to happen, even though they played their first game in their facility as a home team against the Washington Nationals. That tells you what a difficult situation they're going to be facing. Dusty Baker said in so many words, well, there's nothing you can do except pull up your big boy pants. Mike Fiers, who was the whistleblower in that Athletic story that first came out last fall, he was greeted with cheers, but we also heard last week from Josh Reddick, Carlos Correa, about how they've been getting death threats. Here's Carlos Correa talking about those threats.
You don't see positive comments anymore. All you see is, you come to New York, you better watch out. Your wife better watch out. They start talking about raping. They start talking about, you know, killing and all this stuff. So of course, you know, when you go to the field, your family stays behind. Our wives, they like to go shopping and do their stuff. So obviously I feel like they can't do that anymore.
Here's Josh Reddick asked, have you been receiving threats?
Every day. I think we get them every day, whether it's, you know, social media, private messages, just, you know, I know a lot of guys are fearful to even put anything out on social media because every response is going to be, you know, obviously the cheater comments and then, you know, just people take it way too far with death threats to not only myself, my wife, my kids. You know, it's way out of hand to where it's getting a little crazy. So it makes you really, really wonder what, like, going to some places where it could be very dangerous outside of the ballpark to even bring your family. So it's definitely devastating to see the way that people are reacting to this a little bit.
Yeah. So Scott, let's state the obvious. Those type of threats, obviously, are ridiculous and they're unacceptable. And you just feel for these guys having to deal with those. On the other hand, I don't know how, you know, that you get away from it when you're talking about social media. That's just part of social media. Anyone who has a Twitter account, anybody who, you know, who's out there the way these guys are, they know that that's part of that. And, you know, you hope they get as little of that as possible. I think they do need to, the players, just steel themselves for the reaction they're going to get during the course of this season. What do you think?
No question they do. I think we may reach a point where MLB may have, their security people are going to have to take a look at this and they're going to have to decide, you know, are we going to have to send an extra security guy out with the Astros, you know, for the year, maybe have an extra security in certain markets. I mean, that's a legitimate discussion and concern that MLB should have. Now, I mean, I'm certainly not diminishing any of that because it's all horrible. But social media, man, it's toxic. And I can't even imagine some of the comments they're getting. I know, I mean, I'll write a column, you know, that's negative on a particular team. And, you know, the blowback you get on Twitter is you, and I'm sure it's same with you, Buster. It's just, it leaves you shaking your head. It's like, really? And, you know, it's going to be an issue. And I don't know I don't think anybody knows where this story is going to go this summer, because we know it's going to be bad for the Astros wherever they go. I think good thing for them, by the way, they don't play in Yankee Stadium until September. I think it could be really bad there if they played in April. But where they go, they're going to get booed constantly. You know, as you mentioned, fires cheered yesterday. I mean, it's a scandal that has even people that don't pay that much attention to baseball plugged in. I know before I left for spring training, I've got a couple of friends and neighbors back home that, you know, they're the kind that a baseball fan that where they're like, really, you have to go to spring training? It starts now. I mean, they don't really follow it. But I was getting pumped from them for info on the Astros. Like, oh, my God, what's going on? And, I mean, it's going to be coming waves this year, and people are – fans, players even are – you know, it's like you're divvying up sides, taking sides. You know, I think Mike Fiers did the right thing. No, he did the wrong thing. He broke the code. I mean, people are taking up sides for him. People are taking on the Astros. I've never seen the blowback from players against other players. I've never seen that. I doubt if you have either, Buster, in all the years we've been doing this. In, you know, we've had Judge and Stanton and Chris Bryant and Bellinger ripping the Astros. And it's going to be a really difficult year for them. I think their best hope is that the passage of time calms things down a little bit. Maybe in July or August, it'll get a little easier for them. But Dusty's right. Big boy pants are going to be needed all summer long.
All right, Scott. I appreciate your time on this. I'll talk to you soon.
I look forward to it, Buster. We'll see you at a ballpark sometime soon, I'm sure. Thank you.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Got a fresh batch of tweets here. Monday morning, Andrew Campbell at Real Camp Drew asks, going around to as many camps as you do, which is more exciting to see in the early goings of spring training? The first reps of some of the more established players and superstars, or the development and showcasing of the younger prospects?
Yeah, definitely the younger prospects. One of the, you know, the coolest thing is to see that young pitcher who goes out to throw live batting practice for the first time, and you see the reaction from veterans to their stuff. I remember, you know, when I covered the Baltimore Orioles one year, they had a hard-throwing reliever named Armando Benitez who was clocked at about 100 miles per hour, and he broke the catcher's mitt during his first live BP session, and that got everybody's attention, Taylor.
My guy, Adley Rutschman, am I saying that right? Yep. Orioles super prospect, he's out there. Just blasting the ball. That was all over Orioles Twitter the last couple of days. So definitely, I would agree with you there. Very excited for him and for all the youngsters showing out. Matt Hansen at Matt_TheMan. We don't know if Matt's the man or not, but he's self-proclaimed. With Dexter Fowler in right, who do you anticipate playing center and left for the Cardinals?
Yeah, Dexter Fowler was a lot better in 2019 than in 2018. He had an OPS almost 200 points higher, 576 in 2018, 754 in 2019. But you get the sense now that, you know, Dexter's on the backside of his career that they would love for a guy like Tyler O'Neill to step up and to grab a lot of at-bats. And he hit a home run yesterday. Man, is he a bat speed. Like, it's like the bat speed that you watch him swing, you're like, woof. Now, he does have some holes in his swing. He's a young player. He's got to get better. But I do think the Cardinals would love to see Tyler O'Neill step up offensively, and like they'd love to see Harrison Bader take over center field for years to come.
Jesse Pruitt at Jesse_Pruitt asks, do you think the Braves did enough to replace Donaldson's offense with Ozuna and Riley, or do you think they still have more to do?
Yeah, I think they have to prove it that they can fill in that gap. I mean, Marcell Ozuna, veteran player, you know, it's possible that he could come in and give them the offense that they want. You know, Johan Camargo, Austin Riley, this spring battling it out to play at third base. It's possible that those guys could jump up. But the loss of Josh Donaldson was big, and his presence had a lot to do, I think, with how effective the rest of the lineup was. So we'll just see if Ozuna, Riley, Camargo can get it done.
Last one for today, Shelley Holt at Holt Blog Sports asks, if umpires are considered the official representatives of Major League Baseball on the field, do they have any obligation to report wrongdoings with sign stealing?
No, I don't think. I mean, if they heard something, I guess they could, but I don't think they would. First off, you know, and I've been asked this question by some fans. Didn't you hear the banging of the trash can when you did Astros game on the sideline? No, it's a loud ballpark. And unless you're kind of listening for it, you just assume it's some fan sitting up there banging away on a can. And I suspect that's how the umpires felt about it. And we've had situations in the past in which the umpires were, according to the rules, expected to be like the big police on batters staying in the batter's box. And they're not very good at that, and they don't really want to do it. And I think they'd rather just focus on trying to, you know, administrate all the rules that are in place. That's enough, I think, on their plate. And so it's not something I think we can expect umpires to do.
Alrighty, that's Bleacher Tweets for Monday, hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And I just want to remind everyone, I know we have a fervent following here at the Baseball Tonight pod, so I'm sure many of you subscribe, so it hits your phone as soon as the episode is finished. But we're trying to grow the listenership a little bit, so please, you know, tell a friend. Leave us 5 stars on iTunes, leave us a review, or wherever you're listening to podcasts. I'm an Overcast guy myself, so I always go through and star the episodes when I'm finished listening to them. All of that is extremely helpful and helps people find the show. Tell your friends. If you like baseball, I'm sure you know people in your life who also like baseball, and you know, the daily pod is palatable for people that are in it on the day to day. You know what I'm saying, Buster?
Oh, yeah. And I see that on Twitter sometimes. Someone will say, hey, I'm looking for a good baseball pod. And thanks to those who recommend this one. We have so much fun doing this every day, and we'll be doing it all through the postseason. That's it for today. My thanks to Scott Miller and to Taylor Schwenk. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with another episode on Tuesday.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.